If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a fluid situation here on this Friday, Red Friday. We're making things happen, though. It's
can
so funny.
Can I do something real quick?
I wish you wouldn't.
Please let me.
Yeah.
The Border Patrol is presented by locally owned and operated Walker Medical Linen Services. For linens, toweling, scrubs, lab coats, and patient gowns for your medical facility, visit walkermls.com.
Thank you, Walker.
Always.
I was too busy talking to Nate to do my job.
Oh, well.
Well, you were telling me some very important information.
It was pertinent.
See, this is great. I didn't even tell you to book Robert Mays, but I was having fun reading all of the replies to his tweet about made-up categories for NFL awards, and I had planned on talking, and I did talk about it in the 6 o'clock hour, and then you had already booked Robert Mays, and so it's like, what the hell, man?
Hey, I'm telling you,
how do we make these things happen?
You think your thoughts are your own?
Well,
I can read people's thoughts
probably.
So,
and so here is Robert Mays, host of the Athletic Football Show, and writes for the Athletic. Robert, good morning. How are you?
Good, guys. No, I enjoyed that yesterday as well. I was happy that people got a kick out of it. I was not sure if that would garner a response or not, and thankfully it did. So it's always fun to have those days on the internet, which is typically a terrible place to be.
Absolutely. I agree. No, I spent a long time looking, and I was talking about how the Chiefs were nominated for so there was three games that got quite a few votes. The Chiefs and Ravens game, Chiefs and Bengals, but I, at least, you know, my unscientific calculations, I saw that the Chiefs and Chargers matchup from a couple of Thursday nights ago, basically for the AFC West Championship, that may have got the most votes for game of the year, and we might see that game again in the first round of the playoffs. And so for people that haven't read that, I'm just curious what your answers were. We kind of did it for the Chiefs, like for our breakout player for the Chiefs, we picked Darrell Williams. Only had like 300 total yards from scrimmage last year. He's going to top 1,000 yards and have 7 or 8 touchdowns this year. And so he had a breakout year. Our assistant coach of the year. There's a couple of guys who were mentioned in your mention, Steve Spagnuolo. But we love what Andy Heck has done with the offensive line. So I'm just curious, what was your game of the year in the NFL so far this year?
Chiefs Chargers was mine. Just that game, it stuck with me. I feel like for a few different reasons. One, just the excitement that we're going to have watching Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes play against each other for the next 10 years. Like, I can't wait to do that. And that's one of the early entries in what that rivalry is going to look like. Just the way that it ended. I also feel like the fact that it was a nationally televised game, those games just kind of hold a different place in our minds. You know, that game a couple of years ago between the Chiefs and the Rams, if that game happens at noon on a Sunday, I think it's very different than happening on a Monday night when everyone is watching. So the idea that Thursday night game, everyone was watching it. It set off an entire week-long discourse about analytics and fourth-down decision-making in the NFL. Like, I love those games. I love those games that just feel like a collective experience for everybody, and that's why it got the nod a little bit to me. But Chiefs-Bengals made a very good late charge, I will say that.
And so this brings me to asking you about the Chargers, because after that game, because, you know, whoever wins that game had a great chance to end up winning the AFC West. But then the Chargers, boy, they lost to the Texans. And so now they're battling for their playoff lives on Sunday night against the Raiders. And I feel like I'm equally surprised that both of these teams are in this situation, because I thought, I mean, I can't believe the Chargers with Herbert and their young head coach that seems to be ahead of the curve and a lot of these things like you talked about with analytics, they're in a situation where they have to win. Watching those two games against the Chiefs that they split, you feel like, man, those two teams are very close and close to equal footing. But here the Chargers are, they got to win to get in. And for the Raiders, I've closed the book on them 3 or 4 times over the past month or two, and I'm surprised that they've won 3 in a row, and they've put themselves in a position where they can win, and they're in. And so I'm just curious what you think about the two paths that have led these teams to the Sunday night matchup, and now what you think is going to happen.
I think the Chargers are a better team than the Raiders. And I think that game against the Texans specifically they had so many guys out with COVID. And I know that, every team has had to deal with that at some point, at some degree. But I think it especially affects the Chargers because the Chargers aren't deep. Like, the Chargers are a fragile team when you look at the makeup of their roster. Coming into this offseason, they needed to upgrade the offensive line, and they spent virtually all of their high-end resources to do that. Free agency, top 10 first-round pick. You look at their defense, and the stars are there, right? We know Derwin James. We know Joey Bosa, both of whom didn't play in that Texans game, by the way. But the connective tissue, like we like to say on our show, of their roster on defense is very, very weak. They do not have a bunch of role players that you would like, especially up front. And that allowed a Texans team that was the worst run offense in the NFL to run all over them. And it was just shocking to watch. But when you think about how they're constructed, even their backup, starting the year, backup nose tackle, who's been a huge part of their run defense being even acceptable at times, didn't play in that game. So I think this version of the Chargers, and if you look at it, they're mostly healthy. They're as healthy as they've been pretty much all season outside of their offensive line injuries coming into this game. I still think that version of the Chargers is better than this Raiders team.
So do you – I mean, how much credit do we give the Raiders for the fact that they're even in this position right now, considering everything?
Oh, they definitely deserve a ton. I mean, think about what this has been like for them this year. We had a conversation on our show today, and I know this is a disservice to Raider fans because they literally could make the playoffs if they win this week. But I was just talking about Derek Carr and what the next 6 months of Derek Carr's life might look like. Because the Raiders are going to have a decision to make based on who their head coach is and what they want to do with their front office. You're going to look at Derek Carr, who I think is going to be 31 next season. He has a cap of like $18 million in the final year of his deal. And you're going to have to decide, do you want to trade Derek Carr and kind of restock the coffers with draft capital to start over? Or do you think, well, Derek Carr's a good quarterback. That's who we want. And the reason I got started down that path is watching Derek Carr at times this year, he's played extremely well. I mean, he is a good quarterback. He is a guy that you absolutely can win because of, not just win with in the right moments. When you look at the guys he's throwing to, it's really just Hunter Renfrow over the past few weeks with Darren Waller out. And obviously we know what happened with their other wide receiver spot. And their offensive line has not been very good this year. So I think it's a testament to how well he has played at times this year and just how stout their defense can be. You know, it's not a great unit. They signed a lot of stopgap veterans, you know, the Denzel Perrymans of the world. Casey Hayward's actually had a really good season. So I think that they're a feisty team that's kind of a pain to deal with right now because of the way their quarterback is playing and because their defense is full of pretty solid veterans. I don't know what that looks like moving forward, but I do think that that staff and Rich Bisaccia and all those guys deserve a lot of credit for keeping this thing going all year. It would have been a very, very strange season for them.
But you think the Chargers win on Sunday night?
I do. I just think the top to bottom, the Chargers, when healthy, are a better team than the Raiders. And you look at the way the Chargers play on the way the Raiders play on defense, it's fairly static. You know, I think that if they want to give Justin Herbert problems, I would try to be a little bit more dynamic and aggressive, especially on third down. He's been good no matter what you've done against him on third down this year. It almost feels like the typical discourse we have about third down efficiency and how it kind of ping-pongs from season to season for quarterbacks doesn't apply to him. He's just amazing in those moments. But when you don't get pressure on him, when you rush forward, he destroys you. And the Raiders are one of the least blitz-heavy teams in the NFL. So if they are going to sit back and play the way they play against Justin Herbert and that offense this weekend, I think the Chargers are going to win.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs. They go to Denver to take on the Broncos tomorrow afternoon. And it's been a roller coaster for Chiefs fans this year because they were 3-4. And, boy, I think we talked to you pretty around that time. And boy, people were unhappy and mad and what was going on. They went on a long winning streak and had their hands around that number one seed. But they lost the grip against Cincinnati in what we talked about was a hell of a football game. But here they are now. They win against Denver. They're the number two seed. And if somehow Houston can beat Tennessee again, they could get the number one seed. But how do you feel about the Chiefs, where they're at right now, coming off that Cincinnati loss as they look to try to win the AFC for the third consecutive year?
I feel very good about them. You watch that Cincinnati game, and it's almost a live by the sword, die by the sword sort of thing. I mean, the amount of penalties that ended up becoming really important down the stretch because of the way they play on the back end. you know, when you're going to play that sort of defense in the secondary and you're going to be aggressive and you're going to be physical, there are downsides to it. And you're going to get a flag every once in a while. And if you look at it, I want to say that their win probability that the Bengals added on penalties was the third highest of any team in any game this entire year. I mean, it was a huge swing. And when you're talking about a close game anyway, I mean, there are 75 out of 100 different pathways where the Chiefs probably win that game. So what happened against Cincinnati doesn't bother me at all. I think they're playing extremely well. I think they've really settled into who they want to be on defense. Like you mentioned earlier, I think Steve Spagnuolo has done an incredible job. And we were talking about our all-pro teams on the show this week. And you just kind of sit back and think about what Chris Jones is in the larger landscape of the league right now. And I don't really know if people outside of Kansas City appreciate how dominant he is. Like, he is right there. If we're doing tiers of interior defensive linemen, I think that he's maybe in the same tier almost as Aaron Donald. Like, if his level of dominance and what he can do in an individual game, there's really no one outside of Donald in the league, in my opinion, that can take over a game like he can. And when you combine that with, talk about connective tissue, a lot of really good, really useful players across that defense, which is kind of crazy to think about when you consider how we were talking about them in week 4, week 5. But I think that's why you give defenses, especially all season, before you make any grand proclamations. Things can change very, very quickly. And now some of those corners that we were worried about are actually playing pretty well. And that's not even talking about the offense, which the offensive line is solidified in a really impressive way. You look at it, I want to say that in total expected points added generated as a runner this year, I think Darrell Williams is second to Jonathan Taylor, which may seem shocking, but their running game has been really, really efficient over the last month or so. And that was one of the questions that we had about them, right? As teams are going to dare them to run, as teams are going to dare them to take what's there, are they comfortable playing that way? Can they still hurt you? And I really believe they've settled into that version of themselves on offense while still having maybe the most dangerous quarterback in the world. So I feel extremely good about them, as good as I do about any other team in the AFC.
We've spent a lot of time this week talking about game management stuff because of the decision that the Chiefs made to all-out blitz Joe Burrow on 3rd and 27 on the last drive of the game. And I just saw Pro Football Focus said that Joe Burrow's the highest-rated passer in the NFL against the blitz this year, for whatever that's worth. And then, of course, their decision not to let the Bengals score at the end of the game. And we're just kind of wondering, the Chiefs have been fairly stubborn about it this week when they have. They really kind of not wanted to talk about it at all. Will they change those ideas at all in the postseason if they get into those situations again, or will they handle them the same way? And I'm curious if you have any thoughts on those topics.
I was a little surprised that they were so aggressive on that 3rd and 27. You know, it's especially against a team that can absolutely burn you down in those moments. And it's actually funny, if you look at Joe Burrow's numbers against the blitz this year, he hasn't been that much better against the blitz than he's been against four-man rushes in those scenarios, but teams have really refused to blitz him down the stretch. And I think one of the reasons for that is that he's one of the most aggressive quarterbacks in the league against the blitz this year. I want to say that other than Justin Fields and Derek Carr, I think Joe Burrow has the highest air yards per play against the blitz this year. So when you bring heat, they're going to try to really burn you. And that's exactly what happened. So against that team, I don't know if that's the best solution. If you're playing against, I don't know, the Patriots in that moment, I don't mind that sort of approach. So I think it's a case-by-case basis. And the letting them score at the end, I think that's just a situation that kind of creeps up on you and it's easy to screw up. But even in the moment, I was like, I think they should probably let them in here, right? But it feels like that's one that occasionally in real time can be tough to pin down.
Robert Mays is our guest. In the NFC, Green Bay's the number one seed. I think most people think that they are going to make it to the Super Bowl. If you had to pick a team not Green Bay, who would you bet on in the NFC?
I think it's much more wide open than people might think based on the Super Bowl betting odds and based on what the Packers' record looks like. You know, I'm still a little bit concerned about their offensive line personnel. I know it hasn't shown up so far, but when you're playing against a team like Dallas, like that to me, the Cowboys to me are the most dangerous team outside of Green Bay in the NFC because of what their defense looks like right now. because I think their pass rush can just ruin an opposing game plan. But even outside of Dallas, I mean, I think I wouldn't want to play Tom Brady, even with his dearth of receiving options right now. I still think he's played at an extremely high level this year. They still have one of the best offensive lines in the league. Mike Evans is nothing to sneeze at. Tyler Johnson, I think, is an underrated player. Their defense worries me a little bit. They've been banged up up front. You know, their pass rush has kind of disappeared. They're not the same team defensively they were down the stretch of last year's playoffs, so that would concern me. But I also think that on the right day, the Rams are really scary. You look at their team top to bottom and what their heights have looked like this year, and if you have one of those games where Matthew Stafford just doesn't throw the ball to the other team like he had against the Cardinals on that Monday night, that's a scary team. So even if Green Bay has the inside track right now, I mean, I think there are three, four teams easily that could come out of the NFC.
One of the topics that's been big this week has been conversation in your town about Aaron Rodgers. And I'm curious where you come down on all of that issue right now with Aaron Rodgers in the MVP race.
He's the MVP. He's the MVP in my mind. I mean, we've talked about it multiple different times on our shows this week. We did an all-pro show. We did an award show. And if you look at all the numbers, I mean, he has generated the most value of any player in the NFL this year, according to most advanced metrics. You know, and if you just, beyond that, even if you go beyond the numbers, he's the most efficient quarterback in the league. I went back and I watched their last, like, four or five games before we talked about this week. Because I was like, is he really playing that well? Like, is he really playing at that high of a level where he deserves it over Brady, playing one fewer game and, you know, not throwing the ball as much? And you just go back and you watch what he's looked like over the past month, 6 weeks or so. And it's amazing to kind of feel how much he has the game in the palm of his hand right now. Watching that Rams game especially was a reminder of that to me. You know, they're playing against Aaron Donald, Von Miller, with backup offensive linemen. And the way he was getting the ball out, how he was able to just control the game with the underneath passing game, how he was able to kind of navigate muddy pockets and just be totally unfazed as things were kind of crumbling around him. I mean, he is seeing things very slowed down at this moment. And he's already a special quarterback. So when you have a special quarterback playing at one of the highest levels we've probably ever seen him play at, which at this age, at this stage of his career, with a backup offensive line is kind of remarkable, I think he deserves it. You know, we can have a lot of conversations about what this year means about the standing Aaron Rodgers has in people's eyes, and I think that's totally fair. But the on-field production, what he has been this season, I think that he's been the most valuable player in the NFL.
Okay, so if we take quarterbacks out of the equation, who's the NFL's offensive player of the year, Cooper Kupp or Jonathan Taylor?
I pick Jonathan Taylor for a couple different reasons. If you look at it, I mean, the value he's generated, I said earlier with Darrell Williams, Darrell Williams is second in total expected points generated among running backs. He has one-third as many as Jonathan Taylor. It is crazy how much more value Jonathan Taylor has generated this year, if you look at the past couple years, running the football. It's really hard to be as efficient and as explosive. I mean, the number of truly game-changing, explosive 20, 30-yard runs that he's added on top of having, I think, the highest success rate of any non-rushing quarterback in the league this year. So the numbers totally bear it out. I also think that in some more just kind of stats in there, his rushing yards over expected every single, like, so essentially what you get compared to what you should get on how it's blocked is the highest in the league. So that's always the problem with running backs, right? How do you extricate a running back from his surroundings and from his help? Because there's so many different factors that go into running back success. But his ability to turn a 5-yard run into a 30-yard run. And then if you think about his offensive line, you know, we talk about the Colts, like they have this stellar all-pro laden offensive line. And when healthy, they do. But Eric Fisher missed the first month of the season. I think he's still kind of gotten his footing over the course of the year after coming off his pretty serious injury. Quentin Nelson has both missed time and been hurt. He does not look like Quentin Nelson. He's still a really useful player, but he is not an all-pro guard this year. Ryan Kelly has missed the last few weeks because of a pretty devastating personal issue. Braden Smith missed a chunk of the first part of the year. They are not this road-grading dominant unit that succeeds and that allows Jonathan Taylor to succeed. I think he has really gone above and beyond to be a great running back this year. And then you look at what he means for their offense. The Colts are a top 10 offense this year because of the way they run the ball. They are so comfortably the best rushing offense in the league. That has really defined and sustained their success on that side of the ball. So I just think what he has meant to their offense overall and where he kind of falls in line with the peers at his position, that's why he deserves it for me. You know, most valuable player is unfortunately named. You know, it is, we have to think about value when you're doing that. And that's why it inherently tilts towards quarterbacks. That doesn't happen with offensive player. I don't have to worry about who's been more valuable because Cooper Kupp probably has been because of what the passing game is. But I think compared to everyone else in his spot and what he's meant for his offense, I think Jonathan Taylor has been better this year.
The two most likely playoff opponents for the Chiefs are the Chargers and the Colts. Who should Chiefs fans be rooting for to visit Arrowhead in the opening round of the playoffs?
I wouldn't want to play either one of them. I think the Chiefs are better than either one of them, but I would probably say the Colts. At this stage of it, I think Justin Herbert's really good, man. you're talking to the wrong guy. I just, before coming into the season, I thought that he would be like the next guy. And when you watch him play right now, there's nothing to push you off that spot. He is a special quarterback. I mean, the physical gifts he has, but then the process he's playing with right now, it's really fun to watch him play. And even if, you know, the Colts defense is much better than the Chargers defense, they've got real stars on that side of the ball. I think Matt Eberflus has done an amazing job. You'd have to worry about Jonathan Taylor. I would not want Justin Herbert coming into my building in the playoffs. I would much rather play against Carson Wentz, even if I think the Colts top to bottom are a more complete team than the Chargers.
All right. Robert Mays from The Athletic has been our guest. My final question for you, I know you're a Bears fan, and it's been unpleasant whenever I ask you about the Bears, but it looks like it's going to be the end of the Matt Nagy era. Who is number one on your wish list to take over as head coach of the Bears?
You know, I really don't know. And I think that I've come into this process now over the last few years just with a more open mind and a little bit more humility than I would have 5 years ago. Because I think if you look at the way this has gone for teams over the last 5, 10 years, it's so rarely the guy we think will be great. And I think about somebody like Frank Reich, who was the second choice for the Colts and ended up being a really, really good head coach. So I'm not sure. You know, I think the idea of Josh McDaniels is appealing to me because of what you've seen from Mac Jones this year. And I think what that offense inherently does for quarterback development, what it puts on quarterbacks. So somebody like that is exciting to me. I would go with an offensive coach. You know, that I think that's my belief system when it comes to these kinds of things. If you look at what teams like the Chiefs, the Saints, the Colts, even now with Frank Reich, Sean McVay in Los Angeles, I just think having that guy at the center of everything, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay is another good example. I just like that model. So I think a play-calling offensive head coach would be the way that I would go with it. Outside of that, I mean, I think there are plenty of good options that I'm probably not even thinking about. I didn't even know who Sean McVay was when he was hired to be the head coach of the Rams, and look at what he's done so far. Frank Reich was hired in February because Josh McDaniels backed out. So I just want somebody that has a really, really good plan for how to incubate and develop offensive talent, because I think that's the way you consistently win in the league.
You really want somebody from the Belichick tree, though?
Yeah, I think that there's always an exception, right? I feel like you watch what happened with Josh McDaniels in Denver. It was so long ago. Bill Belichick had his own example of that in Cleveland. You know, guys have done better with their second chances. I wouldn't mind somebody who's done the job before. Yeah, personality-wise, that's stuff you can't really understand. My understanding of the way that he handled himself in Denver was pretty rough. But he was young. You know, people learn, people change, and people understand that you have to grow in order to get better results, and hopefully that's happened. But the Belichick thing doesn't really worry me as much. I mean, look at what Mike Vrabel is doing. I mean, that's theoretically off the Belichick tree, and I think he's done a really good job. So that part of it doesn't scare me off that much.
Robert, before we let you go, tell people where they can read you and where they can hear you with The Athletic.
If you want to read me, I think you should get a time machine, unfortunately. Well. But if you want to listen, we do The Athletic Football Show 5 days a week. So it's 5 days a week wherever you get your podcast, Monday through Friday. We did a show today kind of reviewing Week 18. A little bit of a truncated show. It was a hectic day over at The Athletic yesterday for anybody
right.
who
yeah.
pays attention to the Internet. But we did a ton of shows this week. We have 3 hours of All-Pro selections. We did a huge award show. So if you want to go listen to all of that stuff, we had Brandon Thorne on doing all the offensive linemen. I think people will be happy with the amount of Chiefs celebration that went on in that segment. So if you're into that kind of stuff, I think those shows are really fun. I really enjoy doing them every year.
And they can read you on Twitter. You're a must-follow on Twitter, at Robert Mays, right?
I am. I'm on Twitter. I don't know if I'm a must-follow, but I do exist on Twitter, at Robert Mays.
Hey, I enjoy it. Hey, Robert, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Talk to you soon.
That's Robert Mays from The Athletic. Yeah, they loved up Creed Humphrey. I mean, everybody on the line.
How about the love for Darrell Williams?
Well, I told you he's my Chiefs breakout player of the year, and you called me a moron, which I don't understand.
I stand by that part.
Yeah.
You moron.
You moron.
I'm not going to say it.
Well, now you got it.
I don't have to do anything.
Not break until you do.
Because it serves no purpose anymore.
Yeah, it always serves purpose.
It really doesn't.
Says you.
Can you imagine?
No. Here he goes. Oh, I was at it. I can't imagine. I'm going to try to.
We're getting back to the CEH draft pick.
Can you imagine if they had drafted Jonathan Taylor instead?
No, it doesn't serve any purpose.
Because that's not as far-fetched.
You're right.
Because they drafted that position. They drafted that running back. So that was, not crazy to
take back
to dream about that. But I'm just asking you, can you imagine that?
It would have been nice.
No, I mean, like, thinking now, like, what? I mean, can you imagine that?
It's
nice.
I haven't imagined that, but I've imagined, like, what if, like, Jamal Charles was in this?
That's some wild leap that they could have because they were.
Yep.
This would be the best offense.
It's almost like the football guys, like, no, that's not fair. You know?
Right. Because that was just when
too much talent.
Hearing him talk about that, I'm thinking, oh, good God, could you?
But you know what? I know we've said this.
They still had Darrell Williams.
They you know, you're not going to bat 1,000. Not even Brett Veach, but he has done a really good job with this roster.
Can you imagine? I've had to hear people over and over again. You imagine if the Chiefs would have drafted DK Metcalf and McCarr? But
I don't say this very often.
It's wild, you know.
But I was wrong. You're right.
What?
It serves no purpose. Why do I
know,
do that?
But so then you can. I'm just dancing about it.
Oh, I would like it because Jake would have gone nuts about how stupid it is to draft a running back in the first round. And this whole time, Jonathan Taylor would be running like crazy.
And then I would have been like, yeah, I mean, it was the last pick of the first round.
You're going to massage that pick. You know, I mean, it's not really a first round pick.
If you take a running back in the first round, it better be the 32nd pick, you know?
Yeah.
I have an answer for everything when I'm wrong.
But isn't that crazy?
But man. I'm not. And they shouldn't have
taken Higgins went right after CH2, right?
Yeah.
So that sure could have done that, too.
Oh. Well, I wanted T. Higgins. Bad. You know, but thankfully, Darrell Williams has played very well.
Yeah.
And I like what I see from Gore.
I do, too.
By the way, he mentioned Brandon Thorne being on the show. His all-pro first-team offensive line featured Trent Williams, Joe Tooney, Ryan Jensen, Zach Martin, and Lane Johnson. And then his second team was featured Creed Humphrey. So,
I like that.
That's good. Be right back after this on WHB.